I was just telling the group here, I've been coming to APHA now for 40 years, and that's all I'm going to say about my age, but I've been doing research also. I've received several research projects, and this one is very interesting because it continues to give us the opportunity to look at different angles and to look at different data sets within it. We were funded by the National Institute of Nursing Research to examine wellness. What had happened is I've done research in American Indian communities for many years. My mother's American Indian, my father's Norwegian. I've always conducted research in these communities, particularly in California. And tribes start telling us, you know, you come to us, you tell us what's wrong with us. We have a whole list of health disparities, problems. Can you look at something a little lighter than this? So then we start talking about, well, what is wellness? What keeps your communities together? People are always asking me that. Why do tribes want to stay on reservations or in communities? What is this about? And so we start talking about wellness. So we wrote a proposal together and got funded to look at the components of wellness in these communities. Well, California is a very large area, and by the time we got people, our criteria was the community needed to have at least an N of a couple of hundred so that we could recruit from it. So we got funded for this five-year project, and there was three parts to it. There was a needs assessment, which I always do with a focus group so we can understand terms and we can understand some of the problems and issues there and what they consider well. We did a randomized controlled trial to test the intervention, and then we did the data analysis. So here's kind of the study design. I'm talking now about the phase one, where we did a cross-sectional survey of over 500 individuals to look at wellness concepts. And like I said, the information we got was very interesting and continues to provide us with good data. We did 13 focus groups and 459 adults. We did a cross-sectional survey. We did a randomized household survey also with this group to do it. Many people don't realize that California has the largest concentration of American Indians in the nation. About 12% of all American Indians reside in California. California is different in that they didn't confederate their tribes. They didn't group together. As you can see, there's over 100 tribal groups and territories in California, ending up with over 36 clinics and 8 very large urban areas. The urban areas were developed because the federal government, and from the 50s on, relocated Indians into larger cities. And so there were 8 sites in California where they would relocate them, train them, and not give them a return ticket home, make sure they stayed in the city. So we have large urban sites. So I just thought I'd show you, I'm writing a book about my family. So this is my grandmother and my mother at the year 1918 as a baby, and her brothers and sisters. So the measures we collected in the needs assessment was, of course, sociodemographics, health and wellness, psychosocial measures, and something we call cultural connectivity. And we developed a measure for cultural connectivity because with our focus groups and talking to each one of the areas, they continued to tell us, don't you understand, it's belonging. It's a sense of place. It's who you're connected to. It's your identity that keeps a community well, and so we developed that. So these are some of the measures we used, of course, sociodemographics, gender, tribal affiliation, degree of Indian blood, we broke it down, employment, income, high school education, marital status. Some of you may not know that it is legal to be married under Indian law. You don't have to go into the state or civil to become married. We ask questions about what is your perceived health. Would you say it's good, very good, fair, or poor? You're probably familiar with this very common question, and that's how we broke it down. But we also came up with a measure for wellness, and it went like this. Wellness includes feeling good and taking care of yourself physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. How would you rate your own wellness? Would you say it's excellent, good, fair, or poor? And this measure, again, was categorized into two groups, either good, which was excellent, good, or poor, which was fair or poor. So that's how we did it. We also looked at psychosocial measures, which was self-reported history, which is very important, of childhood, adolescence, or physical, sexual abuse and neglect. Suicide ideation and suicide attempts were also collected because it's skyrocketing in many of these communities. We asked the questions about abuse. I was very surprised because when I get tribal approval to do these research projects, they ask to see the surveys. They don't want to have any weird questions asked, so we have to get this approved. And they said, Dr. Hodge, can you ask some questions about abuse? And I said, like what? And they said, physical, mental, you know, sexual, all of the list of everything, whatever it is. So we did that, and I'm surprised that also, just as a caveat, Kaiser Permanente is doing that, is going back into the records and looking at the impact of abuse in childhood, and I'll get to that in a minute, some of the very interesting things we found. So, of course, our cultural connectivity that we got all these sites to agree with was speaking tribal language that made them feel more connected, participating in American Indian practice, and feeling connected to the community. So our connective measures then were these that we agreed upon and created a scale with that. Identity is important. Most tribal members introduce themselves, as I did, as to who their family members are, where they're from, what their tribe is. Introduction is important to place yourself. Membership of a tribe is important, as you all know. Sense of place is. Identity is a group of individuals. It impacts the family and the community. Social support is also important, and we found that out, that connectivity was also tied very strongly to social support. Participating in events meant family events, community events, cultural events. By the way, those people were highly significant who were marginalized. If they did not participate in events, if they were not able to get enrolled in a tribe, if their family disowned them or they did not have family, then essentially they were ostracized and didn't have the support, which was very much tied into cultural connectivity. When we went around, people said to us, please don't take pictures of us. We have hired somebody to take pictures at certain powwows, so they were very nice to give us groups of pictures that we could use in our presentations. So use of language, a lot of language is lost, but if they're comfortable using language, if they understand the native language or they use any terms at all at home, that was counted in our measures. So we developed also a predictive model using logistic regression to look at what was associated with wellness and connectivity that I will look at, and we did just basic chi-squares and Fisher's exact tests to look at these associations. So regarding cultural connectivity, poor wellness, if individuals were in the group of poor wellness, only 17% spoke their tribal language versus 29% who said that they were in good wellness status. If they were in poor status, only 45% participated in practices versus 62%. All of these were statistically significant. And feeling connected to the community, again, was high. The groups, however, were similar in being active in the community, at least 50% Indian blood quantum and being enrolled in a tribe, and there was some marginal difference. Culture is important, and it's very hard often to measure culture. We can measure it with one of the things we came out with this study was data on loss of hair, which, you know, if there's a death in the family, tribal members often will cut their hair, and how the amount they cut shows that the relationship, if it's your children or mother, you cut your hair very short, or if it's somebody you know, or you show respect by cutting a piece of your hair. Sense of place is identity, you introduce yourself with place, and I kind of go through that, but I can go back to this, but what I wanted to show you was this. We looked at associations of abuse. Now, what is Kaiser Permanente looking at? They're showing, actually, that if you have been somehow abused in childhood, your rates of type 2 diabetes, cancer, depression, hypertension, extremely high. There's an association between certain types of abuse in childhood. We know from other records that generally across the board in the United States, women who have been sexually abused in childhood become severely overweight in adult, and often they marry abusers. That has been statistically shown. So I was very glad to start getting this. So you know that you can see that we compare being culturally connected and not connected. So let's see what was statistically significant. Being verbally abused as an adult, okay, very high in feeling not connected, feeling marginalized. Feel repeatedly neglected as an adolescent and as adult also was significant. They felt they were not connected at all in a community. Physically abused as a child, also, as well as physically abused as an adolescent, Sexually abused as a child, adolescent, or adult also was very high. So we are writing papers on this, and not surprisingly, it mirrors that found by Kaiser Permanente for the general population. They've gone back in their health insurance data and is looking at this. So what we also looked at, and maybe it's kind of small, but on these two columns on this side was suicide ideation, whether they had it yes or no, and the third column is the p-value. If they were physically abused as a child, they were highly likely, the risk for suicide ideation was extremely high. Physically abused as an adolescent, not so much as physically abused as adults. So we could compare that with the feeling connected, not connected. And we did, I don't have a slide on that, but if they don't feel connected, their suicide ideation went extremely high. So as we go through this, we can see verbally abused also, adults were very high, and repeatedly neglected. So you may feel, perhaps, that neglect or verbal abuse are not as strong as some of the other abuse, let's say physical abuse or sexual abuse, but our study finds that those things can scar you for life and stay with you, and indeed does, 3 minutes, does contribute to problems. We also did runs to take a look at this, to look at which people were very overweight. We recently published a paper on that, on obesity and high BMI rates. Women who were sexually abused in youth, extremely high BMIs. I mean the 300-400 pounders, not just overweight, the morbidly obese. The one caveat I will tell you is a lot of studies know men will not admit to it. 1% of our men in the study said they were not sexually abused. They will not admit to it. So we do know and don't report on any of that, because we know that generally men will not report on that. And we went around and did focus groups on this. So what to do? I mean, we have to be concerned about things like cancer, things like diabetes, things like depression, high blood pressure. And if we know that abuse in childhood and the way we respond to our people in the community can have a long life effect on individuals. And so this is what I wanted to present to you as far as connectivity, and measuring something like connectiveness is important so that we don't continue to marginalize our people. Thank you so much.